nhau dzechirungu.
Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, August 29th, 2015. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Gibbs Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. The World Food Programme says Zimbabwe's food crisis may be underreported as millions of starving people in cities are being left out of the national count for food handouts.
It is a concern. Obviously, we're focusing at the moment mainly on the rural population because they are the subsistence farmers who've particularly suffered in the south of the country as a result of the drought and failed harvest.
Women rights activists urge African women to aim for higher leadership positions, especially the presidency. And a former Highlanders Football Club player speaks about the late soccer legend Willard Mashinkila Khumalo. Zimbabwe's food crisis, which according to the World Food Programme or WFP will affect over 1.5 million people this year, is said to be underreported, with indications that millions of starving people in cities are being left out of a national count for food handouts. WFP Communications Officer for Southern Africa, David Orr, says the situation in urban areas, though also dicey, is far much better than in rural areas where drought and other factors have devastated most families. Orr tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu the situation is the same in Malawi, which is also appealing for food aid like Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe and Malawi have both requested assistance.
We also understand that the situation for most children in the country is not looking good. What is happening on that front?
Well, those two countries I mentioned, Malawi and Zimbabwe, have very high rates of stunting, and this is reduced growth, reduced growth among children, lower growth than average for their age. And this means that children basically aren't getting the sort of balanced diet, the nutrients they need to grow up. So they're going to be more susceptible to disease as a result. They're not going to develop properly. It's not a question just of their physical growth. It's also going to impair their cognitive development and affect them later on in later years during adult life. It's factors like this that really compound hunger in Africa and elsewhere around the world, when a population just basically doesn't have the strength to withstand hunger and disease because they haven't had the nutrition they needed in their crucial childhood years.
So is there going to be a special package for the kids in the food that you'll be distributing?
We do have operations that, for example, we do school meals in these countries. We have nutritional programs to support them. So the lean season assistance programs I've been talking at are directed generally at the vulnerable population that has suffered as a result of the failed harvest. But it doesn't mean that our other programs will not run alongside. They will, as usual, run alongside this seasonal assistance program.
One criticism of the food aid, Mr. O, is that sometimes it tends to focus on those in the rural areas. But according to many, the situation in urban areas is getting worse, particularly in Zimbabwe, with unemployment estimated at around 90%.
My understanding is Zimbabwe, the unemployment level is around 60%, but it could be higher, and certainly, it is a concern. Other factors are high levels of HIV/AIDS. It is a very vulnerable population. Obviously, we're focusing at the moment mainly on the rural population because they are the subsistence farmers who've particularly suffered in the south of the country as a result of the drought and failed harvest. But you're absolutely right. There are vulnerable communities and vulnerable people in urban areas as well. I've been there myself. I've seen it. It's a very difficult situation. But don't forget, these are resourceful people. A lot of them work in South Africa and send back remittance packages to home. There are coping mechanisms. I mean, I think, you know, we've got to realize it's not the first time that hardship has affected Zimbabwe and other countries. And these are people with a lot of resources in very difficult circumstances.
That was David O, World Food Programme Communications Officer for Southern Africa, speaking with Studio 7. We also spoke to a villager, Makawe Moyo of Silobela in the Midlands province, who says the situation is getting out of hand in the region.
The situation is very bad. We need an urgent intervention where the government can assist, or the non-governmental organization come in and assist the government in alleviating what is on the ground right now.
So now tell us, Mr. Moyo, what are people depending on, let's say on a day-to-day basis, what are people eating there?
We are moving from this ward to the next ward in search of food.
So what do people do? You move from one place to the other looking for food. And who gives you that kind of food?
We are going as far as the Koko district. That's where we are. We will get most of our meals to feed our families. As far as Koko, which is almost 200 to 100 kilometers away from here.
What do you use to buy that food? Do people have money?
Yeah, the situation is very bad. Some, they sell gold, chickens and the likes to have money so that they go and buy maize. To those with the gold and the likes, to those who don't, yes, it's a very bad situation.
So now, if people have to sell their goats and cows and, let's say, chicken and so forth, how much are they selling them for?
To get one bucket of maize, let's say you are selling chickens, almost if one chicken goes for $2, comes five chickens to make it, because a bucket now costs $10. So you have to sell five chickens so that you get a $10, so that you get a one bucket of maize. If it is a goat, it costs of 50 kg of maize. It's an exchange barter trade. I give you a goat, it gives me 50 kg of maize.
And what about if you have to sell a whole beast? How much is it? A cow, a bull, or, you know, an ox?
It depends the kind of an ox which you are selling to those people. Some arrange it to $500 to $600. The whole cost each one will run out of stock. Then at the end of the day, we'll find it. All what we have, property, will end up without any property. Let's say livestock, whatever we have in our houses. We end up selling all those things.
That was Makawe Moyo, a villager in Silobela Communal Lands, Midlands Province, speaking with Studio 7. WFP is seeking $56 million for feeding almost 1 million Zimbabweans. As the month of August, which is widely celebrated as the Women's Rights Month in South Africa, nears its end, women's rights activists are urging African women to aim for higher leadership positions, especially the presidency. More on this in an interview with Olga Spielman of Samgele Women's Movement, a branch of the South African Women in Dialogue, who first tells reporters Tandekile Mhlanga that her organization is also considering assisting women from other countries who reside in South Africa.
We are not just focusing on South Africans only, but we are focusing on any other African women. We have to assist them. We can't treat them. They are coming here because of the challenges that they are coming across. As much as that they have assisted our brothers when they were up on their country, then on here we are doing our atmosphere so that they can be assisted in that regard.
As an organization, what are your other aims concerning women empowerment, especially on attaining higher positions in government?
You see, now, this year, our focus is more onto reclaiming the women in power, not like competing with men, but also to make sure that women are also capable to rule. They can lead Bailanga. The presidency is not just is going to be the first time in South Africa, but it also happened in other countries. And it seems to that regard, we are a little bit far behind because they are in the Alanga. The leaders from other countries, Abu Mama O. Johnson and Abu Mama Ulanga Ubanda, they are the presidency of the other countries. So we do have also our mother here, Nkosazana Zuma, also on the AOU. She's the chairperson there. And now we are rallying behind to say we also want a woman president here. And we are taking from the philosophy of Makhosi Gavi, and because Umama Ugavi, the wife, she was also leading. And why can't women of Africa do the likewise?
That was Olga Spielman of Samgele Women's Movement, a branch of the South African Women in Dialogue, on the line from South Africa with VOA's reporter Sitandekile Mhlanga. Most African countries are led by men. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. As usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum. I am Thato Muchoni, a Mandela Washington Fellow attached with the Voice of America Zimbabwe Services, standing in for Mavelasa Mhlanga Nyahuya. This evening, we are talking about underrepresentation of women in politics. Our guests are Priscilla Misihairwambi Mushonga, Member of Parliament, and Dr. Mpura Matlapeng, Lesotho's former health minister. Mushonga gives her view on factors affecting underrepresentation of women in politics.
One of the major issues is that you are dealing with institutions that are structured to accommodate men and not necessarily to accommodate women. So you will find that even in circumstances where women have dared enter that political field, whether it is in Zimbabwe or it is in America, okay, we can see Hillary Clinton trying to get in. Men will always bring out the institutional barriers to ensure that women don't succeed. So I think there are a great number of women who are now daring to get into those institutions. But as long as those institutions are organized to accommodate males, I see a number of women in our own parliament, for example, because it's structured in a manner that only men can stand up and speak. You know, women don't want to deal with issues of confrontation. They then easily get scared. So you don't get the women's voices coming out, even when they are there in terms of numbers and representation. So until we deal with the political institutions themselves, whether they are political parties, whether they are parliament, whether it's cabinet, whether it's just bureaucratic administrative thing, we will find that women will always be underrepresented.
Mushonga, do you think women are ready to engage in political participation?
Well, not all women are ready. But I think increasingly you are beginning to find women who are daring coming. But I'm saying the other women who may be tempted to go in will look at what is happening to those that have entered. And that in itself is a deterrent. And I don't believe that it just happens by accident. As far as I'm concerned, it's strategic. You abuse the few women that have decided to delegate in. The rest will sit back and say, you know, do I really want this?
Dr. Ramatlapeng, what more can civil society and governments do to engage more women in politics?
I don't necessarily believe that governments should do anything in particular, but I think women's groups, the civil society where you have majority of women, you know, we have to realize that as women, we are indeed we are a very strong force. We are a force to be reckoned with in all the countries, regardless. What we need to women is to learn to support each other. We could actually rule Africa because majority of the people who elect are women. If we make it an effort to actually support each other as women, and in all the civil society groups, again, you have women there. But we need to realize our strength in numbers as women, and we need to learn to support each other. We are very ready to pull each other down as women instead of actually working very hard to build each other up.
Ms. Mushonga, after what Dr. Ramatlapeng has said, do you think Africa is ready for female leadership?
Well, I don't think only Africa. This is why I gave you an example of Hillary Clinton. Look what is happening to her successful campaign. I don't think you can limit it to just Africa. I think generally the question is, given the fact that society generally is patriarchal, given the fact that people have been socialized, you know, whether they are men or women, to look at leadership and believe that leadership is only defined in terms of one being a male, are we ready to move on? I think yes. I think we are beginning to see women that are crossing those boundaries. I think we are beginning to see younger women who see that there really is no difference between them and men, who would dare come in. But I think the question is, you know, how do we make politics attractive enough?
Dr. Ramatlapeng, what would be the socio-economic impact of having more women in politics?
This has been said by a whole lot of people who are more intelligent than I am. You know, you educate a woman, actually you educate a nation. If you put a woman in a leadership role, her primary role will be thinking of, okay, the family, the children, thinking about the community where she comes from, and she's part of that community. And clearly she would have been part of whatever development is available in that particular area. So if you put women at the helm of government, or if you put women in a leadership role where they are in the decision-making role, my view is you are empowering that particular nation. You are putting a person who will be thinking of the nation first and everything else last.
You were listening to the Women's Forum. I am Tato Muchoni, a Mandela Washington Fellow attached with the Voice of America Zimbabwe Service. Good night, Zimbabwe.
Thanks very much, Tato Muchoni. We hope you are going to have a wonderful day. And finally, in sports news, today we are speaking to former Highlanders player Tumisani Nyoni, who says his late former captain, Willard Mashikila Khumalo, was a great man.
I can say he was a born leader. Everything which he was doing, he led by example. He made sure that you are in time. He made sure that whatever we're doing, we put maximum effort, especially in the field of play.
When it came to him as a captain before the match, how did he prepare you psychologically?
You know, during our days, the left and right wingers were pretty nasty. So I used to say, guys, especially you, Nyoni, will win this game or lose this game on your side. So make sure that you put maximum effort from the start to the end. So by so saying, you'll set me up so that when I get into the field, I know what I'm faced up with.
Now, when it came to issues like jokes and other things, we are told that Willard was a star in that field too. Eh? Tell us a bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really, Willard was a good joker. Initially, we used to imitate some movements by any other people. We used to meet different people altogether, the waiters in our hotels, we used to camp, some other people, even in the streets, we used to just imitate their movements, imitate their talking or their saying.
That was Tumisani Nyoni, a former Highlanders player, speaking with Studio 7 from Bulawayo. Khumalo, who passed away last weekend due to diabetes, was laid to rest on Thursday. We wish to say, rest in peace, Willard Mawi Mashikila Khumalo. That was the music of Love Mama Chaivana coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. Now to recap today's top stories. The World Food Programme says Zimbabwe's food crisis may be underreported as millions of starving people in cities are being left out of the national count for food handouts. Women rights activists urge African women to aim for higher leadership positions, especially the presidency. And a former Highlanders football player says the late soccer legend Willard Mashikila Khumalo was a great man. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gandhi. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.